What's up? You are now listening to Americanized, a storytelling podcast where you'll hear from eclectic first and second generation Americans share their stories and real life experiences as children of immigrants. And you have entered the Blender Love series. Now, the Blender Love series is all about interracial relationships, mixed couples, essentially people who don't look the same or share the same cultural background, coming together to form this bond. And I call it Blender Love because I was inspired by the smoothies that I've been making. And it's a mixture of these fruits that come from different places and grow differently and have different backgrounds, similar to people with different cultural backgrounds. You bring them together into this blender and you mix them up and you blend them, and they become one unit, mirroring those relationships with people from different backgrounds who look different and are racially mixed, and create something beautiful. And if we're talking about smoothies, it's tasty and it's delicious. And yeah, that's Blender Love. That's not to say that all smoothies or all relationships are rainbows, unicorns, and sunshine. There are definitely the challenges that come with. And in the series, I talked with a few people who are in these interracial relationships and are experiencing a lot of similarities, but a lot of differences as well. So it's really interesting to see the range of experiences, especially with the range of cultures and ethnicities and backgrounds coming together to form this beautiful thing. In this episode, you will hear from Miguel Landestoy share his experiences of being in one of these beautiful relationships.
Hey everyone, my name is Miguel Landestoy. I'm a musician, arts administrator, educator, podcaster, the multi-hyphenate thing that all of us people of color do here based in Boston. My podcast is called Play Black, and we're actually in the middle of publishing a series called The BIPOC Artist Hour that is just getting started this last week. And I'm really excited to be here with the amazing Roslyn.
Thank you. That sounds like a lot of fun, your podcast. So what's your content?
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of things. So Play Black itself is like arts and culture from the perspective of two artists of color. So where I'm a musician. My co-host Jay is a musician, writer, as well as a arts administrator. And we both kind of tackle the things that we watch and the different media that everyone kind of takes in from that perspective, and try to let people know kind of insider things like that.
That's awesome. I love those spaces for people of color, especially Black people, Black creatives. I was just at a open mic event last night in Roxbury, which was super fun. And I just love that space and how inspiring it can be. It was hosted by Nubian Square Open Studio for the Arts.
Yeah,
no, familiar.
There have been a ton of really great stuff happening in Roxbury that I'm really excited about. They're about to open a jazz club. I think it's Jazz Urbane is taking a part of it. A lot of Berkeley professors are also taking a part of it, which I'm excited. We need a new jazz club. I'm a jazz musician, by the way.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really cool. I'm always looking for a nice jazz club. I feel like the ones that are in Boston are like pretty old, not super modern or current. I mean, still good music, but I feel like the scene is just old and not, as far as diversity goes, not super diverse.
For sure. Post pandemic, it's tough. Before the pandemic, there was a couple of nights at the most notable jazz club in Boston, Wally's, that were specifically like neo soul, hip hop, R&B nights that were super diverse and really cool. But you're right. Outside of that, it's a little old and white.
Old and white. Yes, I did check out Wally's on my birthday, and it was a cool scene. They were doing a Latin jazz night.
Cool. Very cool.
Which was, yeah, pretty cool. So we connected over Reddit, me trying to find, love Reddit, find people who can identify with being in a mixed relationship, I guess, interracial, intercultural, whatever you want to call it. I feel like it's so common now. It's not so much a taboo, although, no, I would say everyone is at peace with it now, as opposed to like decades before. So I want to hear about your perspective, and we can dive into some questions and more things that you were interested in talking about.
For sure. So for all you folks out there, my name is Miguel. So you probably hear that I'm some flavor of Latino. I'm Dominican. I'd consider myself Afro-Latino. I'm the first person in my family born here in America. You're not going to see any video. So, but like, I'm a fairly light-skinned cat when it comes to the colors spectrum, I guess. But I've held some pieces of the Black experience as well as some pieces of the Latino experiences, which is why I use Afro-Latino. I do have a white partner, which is somewhat taboo sometimes in our culture. My partner's name is Kelsey. They use they/them pronouns, and I've been with them for 7 years. My gosh, which is pretty wild. And it's an interesting thing, being the first generation of your family in America, because you're kind of constantly between two worlds, like what your parents' expectations are, your family's expectations, you're taking in of what America even is, with no backup or understanding of what that like looks like, and navigating it from there. So it's been quite a journey, but you know, all good things so far.
Nice. That was well said. Totally relatable. Me also being a first generation from an Ivorian family. So I feel like what you said about expectations, as funny as, you know, your parents have expectations for you, expectations for the country of America.
Right.
And how you can really intertwine those, but then not really the expectation of, well, America is a predominantly white country. So
right.
The likelihood of your children ending up with a white partner is pretty high.
Yeah.
And that's not expected, I guess. It's like a totally. Huge shocker. I don't know how your family, if or when and if they've met your partner, what that was like for you.
My parents have always been fairly supportive of my relationships, I guess. My partner is like well integrated into the family at this point. So it's not really like taboo or anything, but like how we go about our relationship as far as like living together, not being married, or like the different way we interact with our families. I'm very involved with my immediate family. I'm constantly helping out, constantly checking in. And not that it's like less care or anything, but it's definitely a different way to my partner and how they kind of relate to their family, a lot more independent, which is like kind of shocking to me. I don't know if you experienced the same thing. I don't know if you're in an interracial relationship.
Oh, absolutely. I am. Got married over the summer.
Congratulations. Partner,
thank you. Partner is white, and I agree with you. I come from a big family, one of five siblings, and we're just super close. We're like all like about a year apart, each of us is like back to back to back. Super wow. Close siblings, yeah, and always just helping each other out, relying on each other, doing things for each other, just a lot like a cliche close-knitted family community, just because I don't have a lot of family in America outside of my immediate family, so mm-hmm. I feel like the bond is just super close. And my husband's family, they're all for the most part in the US, but all over the country, and right. Even his immediate family is kind of, you know, he has a sister in South Carolina, so definitely more independent. And I feel like that's something that American parents do push for, as opposed to other cultures. It's very much American to be independent, doing your own thing. So it was always be a tough balance between hanging out with, at the time, like my boyfriend versus family. Right. And yeah.
Yeah, I think that was exacerbated a little bit through the pandemic too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know about you, but like I was constantly getting like text, phone calls, WhatsApp messages, like the whole nine about like, hey, you haven't seen us in a bit and all this kind of stuff. And I'm constantly like, hey, I'm not trying to get you sick for one. Right. Two, also like, you know, we have our own little ecosystem that we're trying to figure out over here. That whole thing. So I don't know if you experienced something similar, but I think the changes kind of almost got accelerated by the pandemic as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because the need is just so much higher for like, right. You know, helping out, but then isolating yourself because that's what we're supposed to do. And anytime someone mentions WhatsApp as a like an immigrant, I just laugh because it's so, so relatable. Everybody is on WhatsApp for some reason relating to their family. Everyone gets it. Yeah.
Everyone has a WhatsApp account. I get yelled at all the time because I only check mine like once or twice a month because I'm like constantly running around. And mm-hmm. I'm like, everyone's like, you have to message us more. And I'm like, I don't check WhatsApp. If you want to get in touch with me, just text me, please.
Yeah, it's tough because I used to be like that too. But now I'm like on it, I feel like almost every day because my sister uses it and she lives in Ivory Coast. So just to keep up with her. Yeah. So I used to be like, yeah, once a month, but now I'm like, and having since visiting all my family back home, I do want to be more in touch and in contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it is still a challenge if that's not like your main form of communication.
For sure, for sure. You mentioned, if you don't mind, if I can ask you a question really quick.
Yeah.
It seems like you have like a pretty solid connection to like your family in the Ivory Coast and like that part of the culture. I actually haven't been back to Dominican Republic in like 20 years.
Oh, wow.
So my relationship to the island versus like who I am as like an American person is very skewed. I just haven't had like the time to, maybe not the time, I haven't had the resources or like the time to build that relationship with that culture. Which is also like another kind of rift between me and my very, very Dominican family, you know?
Right, yeah. I'm wondering, I feel like if it wasn't for specific reasons, I don't know that I would be as involved or close to my extended family. My first trip to Ivory Coast was with my dad and my two sisters in like the summer before my senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I met pretty much all my family members for the first time, like not even knowing their names or just, and still like, I don't know who was who.
Right.
That was my first time there. Then my older sister, she ended up staying there. And so I think that's why, just trying to keep in touch with what's going on over there because my older sister is there. And then we went there the summer 2021 because she got married last year. So we went there again and we kind of reunited. And I think there's just a drive to keep in touch with them and not feel they're family, not feel like they're like, they don't exist.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that. I feel that with my cousins and especially the people that are like relative to my age. I try to keep in touch, but at the same time, like life is moving around. I know that a lot of my like aunts and uncles probably don't have like an amazing idea of who I am as a person. They're just like, because I'm almost foreign, you know, in that way, because I've just been here for so long. And I speak Spanish like fluently and everything, but even then they would still call me like, you don't know how to speak Spanish, or you're not Dominican or anything.
Yeah.
or things like that, which I don't know. I mean, I don't think that's true, but I can see from their perspective how like my being basically divorced from the culture for most of my life has affected their view of me, you know?
Absolutely. I agree with that on for my family too. I don't speak French fluently, and that adds to the divide. But yeah, they don't see me as one of them. And even more, like I met an Ivorian woman at the open mic night last night.
Mm.
And we were talking about it, and, you know, like, oh, were you born here? She was born there, I was born here. And so someone else came up to us, and then he was like, I guess somehow, I don't know if he actually knew I was Ivorian American, or my family came from Cote d'Ivoire, or someone told him, but she was like surprised that he knew that I was. She was like, I guess he thought I looked Ivorian, but she was like, no, I don't think she looks like that's where she comes from. I was looking at her like, oh, okay, like there's a difference, I guess. There's just some difference between being a first generation and then being like straight from the country that they can identify.
100%. Yeah, like, yeah. I get that all the time. Jamaica Plain in Boston, for you listeners, is a very Dominican neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all from most of them are from a very particular part of the Dominican Republic, or a town, province, I guess, called Mani. So like they all know each other and all this stuff, and it's really funny when I will like walk into a Dominican restaurant to pick up something, or maybe I've ordered something through an app on my phone, so like they have my name, and they'll see my last name, and like an old lady will pop out and be like, which one are you? Like, yeah, which one of your family are you? And I'm like, I'm Miguel's son. And they're like, oh my god, I held you as a baby, here, like, take your food. And then like I leave, and I'm like, what's happening?
Yeah, that's funny.
it's wild, but at the same time, like, I don't, yeah, like it's an interesting dynamic. Like, I really enjoy living in JP.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sometimes just nice to be around a bunch of people that look like you and share some cultural experiences, but even then, like, you can definitely tell the folks who were like born on the island or have just come versus the folks who kind of grew up here.
Yeah. And that's such an interesting piece of being Americanized, being a first gen, being born in this country with roots in a different country. Just those dynamics are so unique and almost not universal, but understood amongst the people who also, you know, also experience that.
For sure. Absolutely.
So I want to get more into, I feel like I'm just diving into your personal life, talking about your relationship like this.
No worries.
It's kind of odd, but this is the episode. I like to hear the story about how you and your partner met.
Mm.
If there is one.
No, there is a story, and I bet you that they would contest it if I said something different. So, so I went to UMass Lowell for my undergrad, and my partner Kelsey is from Lowell. A lot of students that went through the Lowell public school system ended up going to UMass Lowell. They didn't. They went somewhere else. But a lot of their friends went to UMass Lowell, so I ended up being friends with them, and we met at a party of a mutual friend, and we were just acquaintances, like, kind of connected through that. We at the time we were both seeing other people, but like years and years later, I was single and I was like browsing on Tinder, as you do, and I saw that they were on Tinder, and I was like, wait a minute. That seems like a good thing. And I was like kind of debating, like, are we gonna match? I don't know. And then I remembered, like, oh, I have their number. Like, what am I what am I doing? Like, we're like low-key friends. So it's like, oh. So I texted them and asked to hang out, and here we are.
Oh, I love that. I love the ending of, and here we are. I feel like I always that's how it goes. And then that was, I guess, 7 years ago.
Yeah, just about. I mean, I've dated like a bunch of different types of people, but mm-hmm. I guess my like longest term relationships have been with white people. And that's always been an interesting thing, because I feel like some folks from the culture, be it like Latino or African-American, maybe not look down on me, but they're kind of like, oh, you only date white women or whatever. And I'm like, no, it's just kind of ended up that way, that my longest term relationships have been with white people, I guess. I don't know how to end that eloquently, but here we are.
It's interesting. My husband was the first person I introduced to my family as my partner. And
wow.
Definitely well received. Nothing like my parents are pretty open. My mom always says, like, as long as you're happy, that's what matters. And she just wants your happiness. So, like, no weird drama. I'm wondering if this were to be like years ago, what if there would be a certain weird dynamic? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Like, even 7 years ago, interracial couples they weren't rare or anything, but like they were rare enough that me and my partner, we actually came up with a little hand sign when we would see another interracial couple and just be like, oh, check that out. We would, for those of you who are listening, we would kind of just rub our chest over our heart and be like, oh, look at that. Like we have, there's another interracial couple over there, and kind of like do the nod.
I love that. Yeah. One of my favorite things to see is a couple that looks like you. Boston too, just city is just so diverse and liberal, so not uncommon.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Boston and its suburbs, like, I wouldn't say, like, I don't know about you, but my experience, like, growing up in like the like suburbs of Boston was like, it's diverse, but like if you went down south, you'd see a lot more people of color and stuff like that. I grew up around a lot of white folks, so that was kind of normalized for me. Mm-hmm. Have you found in your conversations that like the people of color you talk to from different parts of the country have a completely different kind of experience of interacting with whiteness in that way?
I feel like people around the country, if they're young, I feel like young people just accept a lot. Like, our tolerance is pretty high for a lot of things. But older people, for sure, they definitely have a different perspective. I feel like, you know, just elderly people, even elderly people in Massachusetts, do have stronger views about that.
Yeah. I got a story for you real quick.
No, go ahead.
I just remembered something. I met one of my partner's aunts and uncles years ago. This is a part of a family for them that like they hadn't seen in a while, and they were just kind of in the area, and called Kels up and was like, hey, we're in the area. We'd love to meet you and your partner. And Kelsey's aunt is like super like knew my name and everything. Like, so when you hear Miguel, you assume, you know, a person of color, right? But I guess their aunt hadn't said my name or anything to her husband. So we met them, and his eyebrows just went real high. when he met me, totally kind, just like kind of like looked like, oh, I wasn't expecting that at all. And it was just real funny. It was I don't know about you, but those kind of interactions with white people, I just kind of laugh because it's just I think it's really funny.
I agree. I think you have to laugh at those moments, because I feel like white people are just really funny in the way they interact with people of color. It's almost as if they don't know how to, which is what I've come across in like my workplace and just experiences with different white people. There's like, there's a discomfort almost.
Yeah. Especially now where like, you know, no one wants to get canceled, I guess. So they're just like, oh, did I say the wrong thing? Did I say the right thing? Oh no, oh no, oh no. And they almost make it worse.
Yeah. Honestly, it's like, chill out. You're good. No one said anything, you're fine. But no, that's funny. Or there's almost just like a pause, a silence, an awkward silence, because they don't know how to receive you. even though they don't mean anything by it, just like they have to take a minute to process your skin color. That's what
does not compute. Like, it's like a printer without that color ink. You're like, I don't really understand how to process.
Exactly. Oh, that's gosh. Funny.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, there's so many stories. I feel like when I first met, I think my husband Parker did tell his whole family that. I actually wonder what that conversation was like. That I'm black. But his family's great. They all, like, I am a part of their family, and it's just been so comfortable around them. But I am curious about what that was like. What was said, what were the questions, you know, just out of curiosity.
Of course, right? Like, it's definitely an interesting conversation. Random aside, have you seen the movie Get Out?
Oh, yes, I was gonna. Yes, I have.
I don't know. That movie was both amazing and exhilarating and just overall terrifying. It was like, how many times have you been in a room of white people like, are they all conspiring against me? I don't know.
Right. All the time. I think Get Out came out in 2017 and I was dating Parker in 2018. And then my first time meeting his family was like the winter, I think Christmas Eve, 2018. So just as a joke, I think my whole family, we've all watched Get Out, and I think Parker has too. So they were like, it was like my first time going over his house, meeting all his family, like kind of formally. Mm-hmm. So it was just really reminiscent of Get Out and, you know, the tea and drinking tea with his mom. And I was like telling my sister, like, this is real, like just being extra safe, but also like in a joking way, because Get Out is... as fictional as it is, it was really like, you know, you have to question and side eye every white interaction you have because of the movie.
Big facts. I watched that movie with my partner, and they were reveling in both my laughter and terror. Just in a joking way, just being like, oh, are you going to be nervous at every like family gathering from here on out? And I was like, maybe, I don't know. Like, should I be nervous? Like, what's good?
Yeah. What's going on? It's scary. Oh, it's like there's a more level of intense because it's like people that it's your partner's family. So there's like it's not just random white people, like your work coworkers, or you're in a grocery store or whatever. It's like people that could potentially be a part of your family.
Right. Yeah, there's a bit of a pressure there to make a good impression, but also hold your boundaries. And those lines cross from time to time, you know, like if someone says something to you out of pocket, like, what's the line? Like, are you going to be like, hey, that wasn't a cool thing to say? Or are you going to let it slide so you don't cause a big thing and be the angry black person at the party? Like, there's a lot of nuance, which is why I think people of color tend to be really excellent social navigators, because to survive, we kind of have had to learn how to do that really effectively.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like code switching is also a thing, and just like reading the room and then knowing, like you said, your boundaries and limits.
For like, sure.
Do you have to speak on everything? Do you let things slide? Is this a conversation you might have with the person in private at like another time? Many layers to it.
Totally.
And that's crazy. It's like we can't even normally interact with people without all these layers. It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. And you don't really realize it until you're older and you've started to like kind of maybe educate yourself about microaggressions and code switching and things like that. Like, that's a whole other language that even us people of color, especially first generations, had to learn as we went along to kind of understand our worldview.
Exactly.
And that takes time and effort that we don't have. I don't have time. I don't know. I don't have time to be doing that.
No, not at all. Not all the time.
Mm-mm. For sure.
And it's so draining. I feel like that's why a lot of social interactions or opportunities to socialize I feel like I want to pass on because of the work it takes to just be there.
Yeah, just to be. Just to be is like 30% more work than everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
It's wild.
It is wild. We will end part one of Miguel's story here, and be sure to tune into part two to hear more of his story and how we can relate to him and his experiences. As always, thank you so much for tuning in, and hope to catch you in part two, the next episode.